You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Y'all remember this?
Hey, Mom! The meatloaf!
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
What is your nickname, Tavondre?
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Shout out to my grandma, Miss Ebony. She named me Meatloaf.
The Meatloaf!
What do you think? Wouldn't that be great if that's the way you're introduced in the NFL? Wouldn't that be great?
I would love it.
The Meatloaf!
The Rich Eisen Show. Today's guests, ESPN investigative reporter Tisha Thompson, chairman and CEO of Wasserman Media Group, Casey Wasserman, 2024 NFL draft prospect Darius Robinson, and now it's Rich Eisen.
That's correct. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. We're live on the Roku channel, and just for everybody who might be listening on Sirius XM and Odyssey or this Rich Eisen Show terrestrial radio affiliate, in support of the Roku channel, I'm wearing a fantastic purple sweater today. It kind of matches the color. I think it matches the color scheme of the Roku channel, and it's just the way I am. There may be an eye in Rich and Eisen, but I'm a team player. The Roku channel is free on all Roku devices known to mankind. It's also on select Samsung smart TVs, Amazon Fire TV, the Roku app, and the RokuChannel.com. We have not one but two in studio guests. One of the top defensive linemen in the draft, Darius Robinson from Missouri, is going to walk in this door in hour number three, and we'll have a chat with one of the top defensive prospects in all of the National Football League draft land. And then the CEO of the Wasserman Group and the man who is bringing the Olympics to the city of Los Angeles, Casey Wasserman, will be here in studio, and we're going to have a nice deep dive on college athletics and the future of sports and clearly what's going on here in the city of Los Angeles. The Lakers have now won five in a row. They won back-to-back games. They won in double overtime in Milwaukee, and then they go into Memphis last night, and they do it again. And then the Los Angeles Clippers, T.J. Jefferson, mm-hmm. It was the T.J. Jefferson Bowl last night, man. In Philadelphia. They took care of the Sixers in a game that at the very, very end, Kelly Oubre went off the rails. And there was a lot of off-railing last night with Draymond Green getting ejected and the Golden State Warriors still winning. So there's all of that to discuss in this program. Our first guest up, it's opening day, everybody. Happy opening day in the world of Major League Baseball. I thought there would be some sort of an organist, but it's okay. That was more of...
Yeah, you need that organ. Yeah,
I don't know. That's all right. The top story in my mind is still Shohei Ohtani, what's going on with him. The Dodgers opened things up here in Los Angeles later today, and the ESPN reporter who broke the story last week, Tisha Thompson, is going to be on this program. It was 1 week ago today where it all came out, actually 1 week ago earlier this week, where it all came out, and then the story changed from the interpreter, and then all holy heck is kind of broken loose. And so I have lots of questions for the reporter that has been all over this. Tisha Thompson's going to be up in about 16 minutes' time. Good to see you, TJ Jefferson. How are you over there?
I'm great, man. Just, you know, that Sixer-Clipper game, it's the best of both worlds.
And the Paul Heyman interview, when it was clanking around all the wrestling sites. So we appreciate that.
Yeah.
We appreciate that. The candle's lit. Good to see you, Jay Felly. How are you?
Good to see you. A little lonely over here.
Yeah, I know. A late-breaking... family emergency. Everything's all right in the world of Chris Brockman, but he had to tap out of today's show last second. But it's okay. I'm here for you.
Yep. Still two bald guys on the show.
That's correct. It's two in studio guests and two guys with me here on this program. So you know how we're going to start this show? We're going to start this show with the top of the NFL draft that I believe, what's today's date? Today's the 28th, right? Mm-hmm. So it will be one month from now that the NFL draft concludes. And as of right now, the conversation is to who's going to be the second overall pick in the draft, because I do believe Caleb Williams, when it is all said and done, is 100,000% going to be the first overall pick in this draft. Who's going to be second overall? Jaden Daniels had his pro day yesterday. Drake May of North Carolina is having his pro day today. And then of the top four quarterbacks, with all due respect to Michael Penix Jr., he's currently considered quarterback number five in this draft. And the medical exam for a kid that had knee problems throughout his entire collegiate career up until the very end when he was dynamite for the Washington Huskies, he is number five on this depth chart right now. And the question is, who's below Caleb Williams right away? Is it Jaden Daniels? Is it Drake May? Or is it J.J. McCarthy, who at the owners meeting, Tom Pelissero, my colleague from the NFL Media Group, and our friend Tommy P here on this program, he was saying that he heard from many different executives at the owners meeting that they thought Adam Peters, the new GM of the Commanders, would take J.J. McCarthy second overall. And I came on this program saying on Wednesday that, hey, no matter what you're hearing about J.J. McCarthy at that owner's meeting, and no matter what I may feel about J.J. McCarthy, when guys work out at their pro days, there is some recency bias. And Jaden Daniels yesterday had, as one would expect, one of the great pro days out there. From the way that he conducted himself on the field to the way that he wore the uniform number. I believe Greg Brooks is the name of his teammate who missed last year due to a brain tumor. He wore his colleague and his friend's jersey number while he was out there going through his pro day activities. And then afterwards, he handled all the questions. We had not heard him speak since his combine appearance at a podium, and he looked the part. He looked terrific. And obviously, when you're throwing to Malik Nabers, who ran a 4.35 40 and had a 42 inch vertical leap and was absolutely crushing it at his pro day, and he could be one of the top receivers, if not the top receiver to be taken, and Jaden Daniels could be, who knows, if things go completely haywire, in my estimation, because Caleb is projected to be the number one pick, and that is who it's going to be. I think he's going to be the second overall pick, Jaden Daniels, when it is all said and done. That said, he had this to say about the interesting rumor over the last couple of weeks, as things happen, as you know, nature and sports journalism and conversation abhors a vacuum. The rumor that he might not even want to go to New England because it is such a rebuilding project there. This is what he had to say on that subject matter after his pro day on Wednesday.
I think you responded on Twitter. Somebody had reported that you wouldn't want to play for the Patriots. And I'm just curious, you know, what it would be for you to get drafted by the Patriots, and if you would like to go up there and play in New England.
Same as for everybody. You know, it's whoever want to draft me, whoever believe in me. The stuff that I can't control who, you know, calls my phone on draft day. So, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, just the reports out there, you know, obviously sometimes you got to call out cap for people. So, you know, that's what I had to do.
So I'll ask you, TJ, is that the name of the reporter who said that he might not want to play for the Patriots? His nickname was Cap?
No. The reporter is not Cap.
Okay.
He's saying he's just going to say that that's a lie.
Oh,
you know about Cap.
Is that the blue hat?
The blue hat. Yeah, the blue
emoji,
hat,
which
yes.
Means Cap is crap.
Crap.
Right? Garbage.
A falsehood.
A falsehood.
Would. Yes.
Telling no truths.
Yes. Okay. A flat out lie, okay. Even. I mean, if you want to go that far.
I just don't know in this day and age, and I know our good friend RG3 said he thinks that Caleb should pull an Eli because the Bears habitually have been terrible in getting quarterbacks to mature and perform and bringing a quarterback along, right? And then Ryan Poles said at the owners' meeting that that upset him. It kind of offended him because he and Eberflus have been brought in to break that cycle. I don't know of any kid that would sit here and say, I don't want to play for New England or the Crafts or be the toast of Boston. I don't think I have any desire to do such a thing. kind of makes no sense. And I understand that that is the biggest question mark. Because at least with the Washington Commanders, you know who you're throwing to. You also knew who the offensive coordinator is in Cliff Kingsbury. He just, you know, helped sprinkle some extra fairy dust on whatever Caleb Williams is bringing to the fore these days. I understand Caleb didn't have a better year this year than last. I think we're talking about who's around him. I don't think we're talking about how Cliff Kingsbury didn't help him mature and didn't develop him. So, I understand that the Commanders have that better situation, it looks like. But I wouldn't discount the New England Patriots for getting this thing right in the very, very end in the long run. So, Jaden Daniels, I think, won't even be there. I think that's a moot point. I do believe at the end of the day, the way things are looking 1 month out right now, that Jaden Daniels, the way that he performed last year, the way that he looks the most pro-ready, according to all of the observers, that he's the guy that can start week one for the Washington Commanders. And I would love, by the way, I would love to see if that happens. And this is why I think maybe the NFL should wait. They should wait for the draft to announce the schedule and see who goes where. Gotcha. And I think with all of these young quarterbacks out there and the interest level that will surround them, I would love to see a Commanders-Cowboys first game. Because I know they always throw the Giants and the Cowboys together. I would love to see the Commanders and the Cowboys play a week one game. Dak and his first all-in appearance taking on the Commanders and their new head coach, their former defensive coordinator, and Jaden Daniels out there week one. What would he look like? I think that would be great. And I think that's
You're on to something.
I you know what? I'm just spitballing here as we're waiting to hear how Drake May's doing today, and I'm sure he's going to look stupendous as well.
Yeah.
And when he talks, he's just a lot of fun to listen to as well. He sounds like Philip Rivers. Philip Rivers is actually counseling the kid. And I don't know, however, if you know, there is some school bias against players sometimes. And, you know, how Sam Howell is now a Washington Commander ex-quarterback and a Seattle Seahawk backup quarterback. And Mitchell Trubisky is now back with the Bills again, hoping to have his third attempt at resurrecting his career. I don't know if that would be – it's not fair. I'm just talking about how some teams might actually approach this thing. But no surprise –
you're right.
There's no surprise that there are apparently 9 members of the Patriots coaching and front office staff currently in Chapel Hill today to watch Drake May. And that's another reason why I think there is a fit. I know that they hired Marcus Mariota as the backup quarterback in Washington, but I do believe Jaden Daniels would start there and would actually be have Mariota be an excellent complement for him in the quarterback room. Jacoby Brissett is in New England to be a bridge quarterback to whoever I think they're going to sit at 3 in draft. Why in the world would you get Marvin Harrison Jr., who is incredibly talented, for Jacoby Brissett and figure out what you're going to do at quarterback later on? As a matter of fact, if you don't mind, Mike Hoskins calling an audible here. I know we had Bob Kraft. We didn't get to that soundbite yesterday. But to me, New England should 100% pick whoever they feel is the best quarterback available. And I think that when it all comes down to it, Drake May, or yes, J.J. McCarthy, which would, by the way, make my son Cooper, who's a Michigan Patriot fan out there, as a happy kid. I think 1,000,000% they should stick and stay at 3rd overall and choose a quarterback, the best quarterback available out there, because they're not going to be picking this high if you want to be as hopeful as possible. Again, like the last time they picked this high, they chose Drew Bledsoe 1st overall. This was Bob Kraft at the owner's meeting.
Speaking of the draft, there are 3 quarterbacks regarded as the best within that range. Would you like to see a quarterback selected with the number 3 pick?
You know, I guess as a fan, I put my fan hat on, and I definitely would. You know, in the end, you can't win in this league consistently unless you have a first-rate quarterback and a first-rate coach. On the other hand, you're in different position, and we've never been in the third draft position since we've owned the team. And what happens, a lot of people behind are really desperate to move up, and so we're going to be open to whatever can come our way. But in the end, I'll let the team make the decision what they think is best. One way or another, I'd like us to see us get a top-rate young quarterback.
Well, that's the end of that. So, top-rate young quarterback, that's how you get it at 3 overall. You don't get it in the top of the second round, hoping that Michael Penix might still be there.
But he didn't seem opposed to the idea, Rich,
of trading out.
If the right deal came.
Well, I mean, you know, if somebody wants to offer them the Godfather offer. You know, if the Vikings are desperate for Drake May and sitting there at 11 and want to flip them both first-round draft choices this year and something a little extra next year, they might be tempted. If they like Bo Nix or Penix enough, and the Penix is sitting there at 11 and they'll go do that, that is entirely possible. But I think we're going to see Drake May impressed today, and I kind of think New England's going to stick and stay. And then it's the question is who trades up to 4? The way things look right now, it sure looks like it's going to be 4 quarterbacks in a row to start this draft. March Madness returns tonight with the Sweet 16. We'll discuss that. I've got some a top 5 that I want to show everybody. I put it out there on the old social feeds about my top 5 games that I'm looking forward to seeing at the March Madness restart in the men's bracket. Caitlin Clark's got quite the deal on the table from Cube.
Yes, she does.
We'll discuss that on this program. Casey Wasserman's walking in studio in hour number 2, talking to one of the top folks here in Los Angeles in terms of the sports world and obviously in terms of the agenting world. And he's also, shall we say, highly connected to the UCLA sports program. And their head coach just left to become an offensive coordinator for another big-time program. So, I'm sure Casey has a lot of thoughts on what's going on in the world of college football. Darius Robinson, one of the top defensive linemen in the draft from Missouri, will be here in studio hour number 3. There's you at 844-204-RICH, number to dial. But boy, do I have tons of questions for Tisha Thompson, the individual who broke the Shohei Ohtani story for ESPN, and what is going on there. That is next. This edition of the Rich Eisen Show is off and running on a busy Thursday.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back here on the program, 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. We're right here on the Roku channel. And so your Clippers won a big ball game last night. Did you hear that James Harden said he didn't know why they were booing him? Why they would boo him?
I did not hear him say that.
Yeah, that was his, that was the final quote I read from
I would assume
from the gamer.
Fairly obvious why they were booing him, but, you know. It was just weird. Those teams essentially had back-to-backs with one another. The Sixers were in town here.
Yes.
This weekend, and then... And the Clippers got a bit, man, they did not look good the majority of that game yesterday.
They did not, but they still came up with the dub.
Came up with the dub.
Kawhi didn't look very good throughout much of the game. No, all he was doing was rebounding and playing a little bit of defense, and then towards the end, to a couple of and ones. And
he took over at the end of the game.
My gosh.
On both sides. That guy is just, Kawhi Leonard is phenomenal. He really is. And he's a guy who doesn't get talked about enough, in my opinion, when you talk about the greats of the games. Look at his resume. Look what he's already accomplished.
Oh, sure. So, you know, and I just remember a couple of years, was it last year, a couple of years ago, where they didn't care whether they were the 4 or the 5 seed?
Yeah, and it turned out to...
It really matter.
Yeah.
And so, although if I'm not mistaken, Kawhi got hurt in that series, and it didn't matter anyway because he was done for the year. But it did matter because I think they went to Phoenix to start that series, came out with a win, and then they wound up losing the series in the very end long run. So right now they're kind of in that similar situation. They're currently the 4 seed. They need to hold serve here.
Have to.
And I kind of feel like this is the way to go here.
Sticking at 4?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
Sticking at 4 and get the home court advantage.
Well, let's see. Yeah, the way they're game over the Pelicans right now, 7-3, their last 10. Clippers defense is just, Rich, it's been awful. So they've got to step it up.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. It is opening day in Major League Baseball, and the top story in all the land is what's going on with Shohei Ohtani, in my estimation. Obviously, the Dodgers, what they do on the field will wind up being a major story. Who's going to be able to actually top them? What's going to happen in the American League? My Yankees are getting out there. Gerrit Cole is hurt. You know, Aaron Judge is already dinged up a bit. We can only hope that he's actually going to play a lion's share of the 162 games this year. What's going on with your Mets as they take the opening day field today? What's going on with them? They've rained out? Is that how it's already working out for them?
Postponed yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
They called it yesterday.
Oh,
so
I didn't even know that.
I feel like we're going to score a lot of runs this year, but we're going to give up a lot of runs too. So there's going to be a lot of probably 12 to 6 Mets games this season, unfortunately, with us on the losing side.
Yeah, baseball starting. And here's one story while we're waiting for Tisha Thompson to zoom in. Ellie Dela Cruz, we love this guy.
Yeah.
Okay? And he is he had me at hello last year with all of his tape measure home runs and rocket arm and cycling and stealing home and being just a breath of fresh air.
He had you at Ola.
He had me at Ola, yeah. From the Dominican Republic, from Sabana Grande de Boja. How'd you like that one?
Okay.
That was amazing.
Did it sound good to you?
That was great.
Okay.
Yeah. No idea if it's right.
You have no idea if it's correct. You can Google it and see if it's right. In the Dominican Republic, he showed up for his first press conference today, yesterday, pardon me, speaking with fluent English, he spent a lot of time in the off season to make sure that he can speak our native tongue and be able to just converse with the fans that way.
Yeah, it's so important to me because now you guys understand what I say, and it's important to the fans to understand me and me understand the fans. And I put a lot of work on my English to talk with you guys, and I think I'm doing a good job. I think. I don't know.
I can vouch for it.
Yeah, I don't know.
How did you work on
it? I practice every day talking with the other guys, and I just talk with them, and I just let it go. I like talk with American guys, because I create confidence.
So Jorge wasn't...
Hey, I don't need him no more.
Yeah, he wasn't doing the job.
Yeah, he was doing the job, but...
Yeah, I can leave. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
But he helped me a lot.
I love it.
He's good at everything.
I just love it, and it just is... it just adds to more for me to root for. And again, in this day and age where we're wondering if the unicorn of Major League Baseball is telling us the truth or not, and Shohei Ohtani, we're wondering what is going on with him, and I am hoping against hope and hoping for the hope that he is telling the truth, that to have somebody like Ellie De La Cruz be as terrific as he is and being as sweet as he appears to be, him trying to connect with fans by speaking English and learning as hard as he can to communicate with us, I think indicates just a lot. And I don't know how many American athletes, if they were in another country that didn't, you know, speak English, if they would go and do the same, to be honest with you. I mean, I just love that that's a work ethic. And plus, in this day and age, if you remove the interpreter, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, I think
because you never know what they might be up to.
He saw what was going on with Shohei, and he was like, let me cut out this middleman.
Yeah.
So, that way there's nothing gets lost in translation.
So I just another reason to root for Ellie De La Cruz. Joining us now here on the Rich Eisen Show, I have lots of questions for this reporter who crushed it and has been crushing it on the story du jour in Major League Baseball with Shohei Ohtani, Tisha Thompson. How are you, Tisha? Pleasure to chat.
I'm good. It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you as well. Let's just start with it. When did you first catch wind that something might be up with Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter?
Let's just say several months ago. You know, I have to be careful that I protect my sources, and I can tell you we knew as early as January that these wire transfers existed.
And so when did you first get a copy of anything that had Shohei Ohtani's name on it? And I guess it was spelled as the way that without the H, correct?
Exactly. So I have seen two wire transfers, both for $500,000. One was from September of 2023, so last September, and one was for October of 2023. They both had Shohei Ohtani on them from that bank account as the sender, and the name did not have an H in it. So you can imagine one of the first things we did was sort of dig into, does he use that name? And we have since been told by multiple sources, including Ipe Mizuhara, that is the name he uses as his legal name. It's on his passport, it's on his driver's license, and it's on his bank accounts.
And obviously then it would lend a little bit more credence to the fact that it was in fact him, or coming from him, or from his bank account, or from his computer. And I'm sure that might have lent a little bit more, one would think, standing for you to eventually now reach out to the Ohtani camp. Would you say that?
I can tell you that the thing that we can say for sure is that Shohei Ohtani's name is on the wire transfers. Now, the question, of course, is who sent them? That is the question.
That is absolutely the question. Yes. So now let's, because it's obviously not something any journalist wants to do, is to suddenly be part of the story. And I'm not saying you are part of the story, but the fact that the first story you received from Ohtani's camp was with the interpreter was one thing. And then the story that came from Ohtani's camp after the interpreter spoke was another thing, which now is part of the story as far as I'm concerned. So I'd love to start there here with you now. And so when you reached out on Tuesday, walk me through who you reached out to and how the interpreter wound up speaking to you.
Well, we published a story on Friday that I really recommend folks read if they've not read it yet. And so if you follow along, we call it a TikTok, not like the app, but it's like a timeline. It's a journalism lingo for us laying out what happened when and how we learned it. And as you follow through that story, you'll see we began reaching out to Ohtani's agent, and then we're connected with a crisis communication spokesperson. That's very normal if you have the kind of allegations that we were dealing with here. And so that was not a surprising thing to me. And we had we went through a course of conversation trying to understand what happened, waiting for answers. And Tuesday-ish in the afternoon, we began to get word that Ipe Mizuhara would do an interview with me. And at I was on the East Coast, so roughly around 10:30 at night, we did a 90-minute interview with Mizuhara, with Ohtani's crisis spokesperson listening to the interview.
And that's where he said Ohtani was bailing him out, essentially, from his own gambling problems, Tisha?
Well, so the way I interview sometimes, but oftentimes, is to say, so what happened? And I say, and then what happened? And then what happened? And so through the course of this pretty long, detailed interview, Mizuhara laid out that he had met the bookmaker at the center of all of this at a poker game after a Padres game in San Diego at the hotel room, at the hotel. And he proceeded to be extended credit by the bookmaker and began to place bets. And he, I obviously asked on baseball, and he denied, no, not baseball. He knew the rules about baseball, but the bets were on other things, including international soccer, domestic football, both pro and college, and professional basketball. So we continue to talk. I continue to ask questions. He explained he got deeper and deeper into debt. He was making roughly $85,000 when he was with the Angels, when he starts betting. By the time he and Ohtani go to the Dodgers, he's making somewhere between $300,000 and $500,000. He didn't want to disclose how much he was making. I told him we had sourcing that said it was somewhere in that range, and he confirmed that. So, his salary is changing, but he's getting deeper and deeper into a hole, according to his story. And at some point, he goes to Ohtani, and this is according to the first version of events that he tells me, because, of course, now we know that there will be a second version of events that I get the next day. But in this first version of events, he says that he goes to Ohtani, tells him that he's in financial trouble. Ohtani does not like it, but Ohtani offers to pay off the debts. And I then proceed to ask a number of questions. I wanted to know, how do you wire money to a bookmaker? How does that happen? Who did it? And it's through those series of questions and answers that I begin to get details where Mizuhara says that it was Ohtani who logged into his computer and made the payments. And Mizuhara says it was 8 to 9 payments of about $500,000 each. That matched sourcing that I had for the wire transfers. I had only seen 2, but I had been told it was at least $4.5 million. And then, of course, the next day, we get a different version of events.
Okay, so here's some follow-ups. Because I've been speaking to a lot of people around here who are familiar with this sort of activity, to use that phrase, and they're wondering how in the world somebody who is making as little as Mizuhara could get so deep in that hole. And so you're saying that there was credit extended by the bookmaker to the interpreter?
According to Mizuhara, it was credit extended. He never cashed out, and he just continued to make bets.
And the credit was extended did he say why? That the bookmaker knew Ohtani was behind him? Because that's the reason why it might make sense for somebody who makes as little to get credit extended by a bookmaker.
We are trying to get to the bottom of that very question, because, you're not the only one, and the folks who listen and watch your show are not the only one who want to understand how someone making $85,000 would be extended credit like that. Now, what I have been told by folks who know this business very, very well is if you pay your bills, you continue to get to bet.
and the bills were being paid in a timely manner. Do we know when the 8-9 payments were that Ohtani found out? Because again, if it got too deep in a hole that Mizuhara had to give up the ghost to Ohtani, right? And again, I know this version of events has been completely washed over, but this is the first version of events that was delivered to you with a member of the crisis management PR team listening in. And so the question I would have then is that, so when did Ohtani know? How deep was Mizuhara in by the time Ohtani would know and start delivering payments to allow Mizuhara to keep betting, right? Or that's not the timeline.
In the second version, or not the second version, but in the second interview that I do with Mizuhara, he says Ohtani never knew about his gambling debts. In the first interview I did with him, he said he went to Ohtani in 2023. I have sourcing that correlates with that, that the payments, the wire transfers were made in 2023.
Mm. Okay. And then you said moments ago that at least $4.5 million. Is it possible there's more money than $4.5 million that was paid out by Ohtani, Tisha?
Right now we're reporting that it's at least $4.5 million.
Okay. So now you conduct this interview and then you print this story. What happens next?
A lot of questions.
Yeah. No, what I mean is you print the initial story. What happens next that now you get, you hear from Ohtani's camp that,
well,
oh, no, he was robbed. So
let me just clarify one thing.
Please.
We did that initial interview and we were very close to publishing a story based on what we were told in that initial interview with Mizuhara and what I had collected through multiple sources and document.
Mm-hmm.
We did not publish that first account alone. We ended up getting a phone call. I mean, we were really close to publishing. And we ended up getting a phone call, frankly, a series of phone calls very quickly saying, hold on. I'm paraphrasing. Hold on.
Right.
And something has happened.
How fast after your initial interview was conducted and you hung up from the interpreter and the crisis management PR person?
Oh, sometime.
Okay.
It was some time. So I concluded the interview with Mizuhara roughly around midnight on the East Coast.
Yep.
And to put that into context, I mean, for folks who are just sort of, you know, catching up right now, this was happening in the hours before the season opener for the Dodgers in South Korea. So for me, it was midnight. But in South Korea, where Mizuhara and much of Ohtani's support staff, including the Dodgers and Ohtani himself, it was in the morning leading up to that Dodgers game, which would be played later in the afternoon in South Korea.
Yeah, that's so, the reason why I ask the time frame between you conducting your interview initial and then getting a statement, no, Ohtani was robbed, is they played a baseball game and everybody saw Mizuhara in the dugout, you know, chit-chatting with Ohtani, and they're mixing it up like nothing had ever happened. And it's another head-scratcher of this whole thing. So that's why I asked.
You can imagine what it was like to be me at 6 a.m. watching the two of them in the dugout.
Yeah. So what was it like to be you when you're watching that?
I've been a reporter a long time. And people react in very different ways. And nothing surprises me anymore. Let's just say that. So I was watching it. I was noting it. I was taking pictures on my phone of the two of them interacting off of my screen, like a reporter does. And I was writing about it. I was actively writing the story when that game was taking place. It's a couple hours after that game is taking place as we are, you know, putting the final touches on our story and remain in communication with Ohtani's spokesperson, that we get this statement from Ohtani's attorneys saying that there had been massive theft. Now, that is very different than the interview I had done. And so we make phone calls. You better believe we start making phone calls. And of course, one of my very first phone calls, and forgive me, it might have been my first phone call, was to Mizuhara. And he didn't immediately pick up, but he eventually does pick up the phone and proceeds to answer a series of questions that I ask that are very yes or no kind of questions at this point, because he wasn't nearly as forthcoming as he had been the night before. And so this was me starting with the question, first I read him the statement of, and I said, you know, what is your response? And I didn't get a whole lot. And I said, Ipe, did you lie to me in that interview? And he says, yes. And that's when I get into this yes, no, yes, no. And you can read the details of some of those yes, no questions in our story that we published on Friday. And you can see, I mean, I'm asking, is someone paying you to say this? Or, you know, have you made some kind of agreement to say this? And he says, no. But I also say, was there, you know, confusion, or did you purposely misinterpret? I don't know if that's the right word, but did you purposefully tell Ohtani something differently than what his representatives had said in English and vice versa? Did you say something differently than what Ohtani said in Japanese to his English representation, like his agent or, you know, lawyers or something like that? And he said, no, he had never done that. He had never interpreted anything incorrectly.
Wow. So, because the thing I don't understand, and that I'd love to get answered, and I'm wondering if you've gotten any answers on this front, is how... It's not like you're just zelling $100, you know what I'm saying, to a friend. You're not Venmoing and putting in the notes that everyone can see. This sort of money that, even if it is Ohtani sending it, you can't just wire $500,000 to somebody without a bank noticing or calling up or having some sort of an alarm bell set off. And then certainly if somebody's just wiring the money from a computer, I mean, there's got to be a code at the very least. You know what I mean? There could even be, over the seventh or eighth time, a banking representative that needs to be on the phone. Like, what's the nuts and bolts of the wiring process? What are the answers that you've gotten on that front?
As you can imagine, the investigative unit at ESPN, and I think a lot of other people, are asking those questions to financial experts. But there's really only a very small group of people who will know the answer to that. And that is the people who deal with Ohtani's bank accounts and the people in Ohtani's circle. I will say, and this is just a general statement, this is not specific to Ohtani's banking, I will say, you know, wealthy people operate in a different universe, and he's one of the wealthiest people in sports. They operate in a different universe. So don't take, my recommendation would be to folks, you know, who don't, you know, have $500,000 to wire eight or nine times, you know, over the course of the year, don't take your experiences and apply them here. I think we're dealing in rarefied air.
Well, I mean, that means there are handlers, right? I mean, that there's got
to... We're trying to figure it out.
And in that
you know, obviously, we're reporting out. And when we have stuff that we can... we have journalistic standards. We are not going to just report rumors and speculation and innuendo. I mean, that's not what we do at the ESPN investigative unit. That's not what I do. And so when we have solid information that meets our journalistic standards, we're going to publish it.
And then is it, in the couple minutes I have left with you, Tisha Thompson of ESPN here, your latest story, are you just like cold calling agencies and just saying, hey, are you investigating Ohtani and, you know, or Mizuhara? And has Ohtani pressed charges? Like, and with who? Like, what's the deal there?
I can't take all the credit. I work with a phenomenal journalist named Paula Levine. Mm-hmm. And Paula and I have been investigative reporters for a long time. And we always follow up on what we're told. And we have been obviously reaching out to every agency that we know over, you know, multiple decades of doing this job that would investigate these kinds of allegations. And you can read what people have said back to us in our story that we just published yesterday.
Okay. And so do we know if charges have been pressed? Has he pressed a charge officially anywhere?
Ohtani's representatives will not answer that question.
Okay.
And I have been asking that question as you can imagine, nearly every day.
Okay. So then my last question for you is, where do things stand in your estimation right now?
With what? There's so much.
Where do things stand on where's Mizuhara now? I guess where is
he? That's a good question. Okay, that's a good question.
We don't know where he is. Where do
he has not responded to my texts and phone calls.
Okay, and we don't know who is in fact looking into him for criminal behavior. We don't know that.
We do know that the IRS and Homeland Security are investigating, but we don't know if it is specifically with the allegations of theft.
Okay. And then my last
Again,
one.
I refer people to the article because it really gets into the nitty gritty of that.
And then I will ask the question that I think you would respect me asking, which is, is there anything I haven't asked that I should have?
That's my favorite question. I always ask that question.
I figured you'd appreciate it. So
yes, I always ask that question. Of course, there's lots going on. There's lots swirling in my brain right now, and I'm not done. I have a lot more reporting to do.
Okay, Tisha, thank you for the Zoom, and look for more of my my emails and requests for your time. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. That's Tisha Thompson of ESPN right here. I knew she'd appreciate that question.
Well, you are a journalist, Rich.
Is there anything I haven't asked that I should? Okay. Boy, there's lots to chew on right there. We'll take a break because we're up against it, if you will, in the radio break schedule. We'll talk about this a little bit more when we get back.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
You are the commissioner of baseball. I make you commissioner of baseball right here, right now, to start off. What do you do?
Nothing that anyone would like.
But why would you say that?
Because they're not going to like my ideas. Instant replay's over.
Why?
Who cares?
Because if you see it at home, you need to use it, right?
Why do we have a balls and strike umpire? We don't need that. We can easily do that with GPS. Why is he there? Why is he there? Why not get rid of him then?
That might actually happen.
And then what do you have?
A robot, I guess?
There's a value to charm, my friend. There is a value to it that we sometimes ignore.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
So, replay's gone. Ouch.
Replay's gone. I do kind of like replay, but it bothers me.
See?
The designated hitter is gone.
So, why? Well, I mean,
because that's not baseball. One of the great principles of baseball is democracy of talent and physique. This is what makes baseball very special.
Right.
Democracy of talent and physique. Everybody plays it.
Okay.
Everybody.
Right.
So the little shortstop, the slugging left fielder, everyone's welcome.
Right.
It's democracy.
What do you think of just the intentional walk, like just you go to first now?
No, don't like that either.
Why?
It's fine. How much time are you saving?
About 10 seconds. I mean, it's 10 seconds we can all save.
It's like when someone texts you the letter K instead of OK. What are you doing with that time?
Or thanks.
Are you going to add that up and so you can watch an 11-minute YouTube video of a skateboarder bouncing his nuts off a railing? Is that what we're doing? Someone's texting me TY instead of thank you. TY. I'd like to bounce your nuts off a railing.
Ah, yes. Some Jerry news coming up on this show, Stu. Still to come here on the program. Casey Wasserman is sitting in our green room. We're going to have a great chat with him about the future of college athletics, the Los Angeles Olympics that's coming. Thanks in large part to him. So much to discuss here on this show. Wow. What a chat with Tisha Thompson. I was talking the other day. We were talking the other day, TJ, about why wouldn't Ohtani's people say this is where we've pressed the charge? And I got folks back saying that we don't understand the Japanese culture. Our culture is we want to know, and if you don't share with us your personal thoughts and your personal situation, we think you're hiding something.
And we're litigious.
And Ohtani's initial his whole mantra is like, my business is mine.
I do believe there are some cultural differences, but dude, that probably come into play.
But I heard that. I read that. Cultural differences is one thing. Multiple millions of his dollars have wound up in the hands of an illegal bookmaker in a sport that has banned their all-time hits leader for life for betting on the sport or signing away because he was alleged to have bet on the sport, his right to be in the sport. He signed it. They put him out to pasture for gambling. And so this is a fault line. Like, if the all-time hits leader is told you're never involved with the game again,
no one says.
Then it doesn't matter that you can pitch and hit like Babe Ruth. And so, if somebody stole it from you after he initially told a reporter that you were a good guy to help him out, and for that there's tax implications and there's all sorts of issues, but you didn't gamble. But to now say that you're ripped off and say you didn't gamble, and for us to believe you didn't gamble, and for us to understand you didn't gamble, with all due respect, why aren't you pressing a charge? And why aren't you saying to a reporter that's asking, with whom have you pressed the charge? No answer. And if you're not pressing the charge, are you now still being a good guy to just say, I got ripped off, I don't need the $15 million, I got it coming, I got more where that came from?
Well, I mean, he does.
And I'm just going to do my guy a solid and just not throw him in jail. I'll just say, I got ripped off, don't need the money, and just hope it dies down and I can play baseball? Like, while Major League Baseball investigates? Is that the plan?
It does sound strange, right?
Yeah, the whole thing sounds completely strange because this is the most famous athlete baseball's got going. And internationally, too. And if the initial story was he was the good guy who helped make him whole, and now the second story is I got ripped off, then you got ripped off. Why aren't you trying to throw the other guy in jail? And I understand if the story is now I'm still a good guy. Mm-hmm. Well, you saying nothing when the question is asked of you is not, I don't think it's sustainable.
I understand that.
Cultural differences aside, or not. Yeah.
You know, what Tisha said, and I think a lot of people might be like, how can someone get a hold of this type of someone else's money? And just to put it out there, you know, back in the day, I used to be Ashton's assistant. So at that point, I did have access to bank accounts. I had access to everything. Now, of course, I never stole from him, but it could be easy to get into someone's account, take money. Now, at that time, he didn't have this type of money that he has today, obviously.
Sure.
But I also do know people. I have friends who had assistants who did steal from them, and they never press charges.
That amount of money, though?
Not that amount of money, but for what they had at the time that it happened. But it's just that they just wanted to.
And they never pressed charges, just wanted to go away.
Rid themselves of the person, get them out of their lives.
Were they involved in a business with a commissioner?
No.
Okay.
No. So I'm just trying to, like, just
I understand.
That it is possible for people, you know, when you have assistance, when you're that big, it is possible for people to get in there. But
And it's also impossible for the person who's robbed to just say, I want it to go away. I'm not going to press a charge. The problem is, though, is there a commissioner who's looking into your business?
Now, that's the difference.
And their business that they're running needs to have this thing transparently put to bed.
Yeah, no.
Wow. Casey Wasserman's coming out here. It'll be a great chat coming up next.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.